All right, hi guys. Welcome to my seminar, which is developing apps for iOS, the iPhone, iPad, and iPod Touch platforms. So I'm guessing you're all here because this is just so awesome. So let's get right into it. So you're going to be developing apps for iOS 4, which is the latest stable release of Apple's operating system. To do this, what you'll need is you'll require a Mac running Mac OS X Leopard or greater, enrollment in Harvard University's Student Developer Program, and Xcode 3.2.4 and iOS SDK 4.1, which is available for download from developer.apple.com. Currently, that site is password protected, but once you sign up for our developer program, you will have all the access to Apple's tools. All right, so now some of you may be asking, you know, if you're a PC user, I'm sorry for you. But don't worry, because if you don't have a Mac, we will get you access to Macs. So just email me at scrouch@college.harvard.edu. And we'll get you access to one of the computer labs with the SDK installed. All right, so developing iPhone apps and iPad apps is a very involved process. It's going to take a lot of work and a lot of effort, but it's also a really fun process. All of the development tools are made by Apple. Everything is made by Apple. The programming language was created by Apple. Everything is proprietary. In most cases, you will not be able to use any outside software or development environments. So let's take a look at the development tools we have. The first thing we have is the Xcode 3.2.4 Integrated Development Environment. This is a phenomenal IDE. It's my favorite out of all of them. It has really great things like auto-completion, the newest debuggers, the newest compilers. It's just really superb. Then you have Interface Builder. Interface Builder allows you to graphically drag and drop elements, UI elements, onto your interfaces. And, you know, create kind of basic apps that you can use as templates. Then the final thing, the final development tool you're going to be using is something called Instruments. What Instruments allows you to do is it allows you to analyze your app for basically anything and everything, from memory leaks to CPU usage, allocations, all of that. It's really awesome. All right, so why don't we get into Xcode? So the first thing you're going to see when you open up Xcode is this screen. It's going to ask you to select the type of app you want to create. So you have several options. You have a navigation-based application, which will add a navigation bar to the top of your app. And basically, that'll just give you a hierarchical application that'll allow you to push new view controllers onto the stack. The next one is an OpenGL ES application. That's if you want to create games. I'm not sure how many of you want to create games for your iPhone application. It's a little bit more complex. You're basically going to use all the animation and core motion frameworks of the iPhone system. The next one you have is a split view-based application. This is solely for the iPad. So if you're going to create an iPad app, this is what I would suggest to start with. It's a really great template. The next one is a tab bar application. This can be used for both the iPhone and the iPad. And that'll just add that tab bar at the bottom, which allows you to switch view controllers stably. The next one is utility applications. Utility applications is something that we will not be probably seeing from you guys. If you want, though, they are kind of cool. And then you have the view-based application, which just provides you with a simple view to start with. And finally, you have the window-based application. That's a blank template. That's if you just want to add anything and start from the ground up without any interface builder files, without any pre-made files from Xcode. When you actually select an Xcode project, Xcode will automatically generate some of the code you need to build. So you'll be able to build your app from the start, and it'll just launch in a blank screen in the iPhone simulator. Some of the things that you're going to need to keep in mind is the data storage that you're going to need to use. If you think you want to have persistent state in your app, what I mean by that is basically a database where users can enter information and have that be saved through, you know, multiple sessions of the app from opening and closing, then you're probably going to need to have the core data wraparound. So for some of these application options, you'll see a checkbox and say use core data wraparound for data storage. And you're going to want to check that. We'll talk about core data later. So let's actually go into Xcode right now. And you see this is basically a simple app that I created just for us to take a look at. If we look at another app right here. All right, so this is what the Xcode IDE looks like. So the first thing we're going to want to take a look at is this section of Xcode right up here. What this allows you to do is this allows you to see all the files that you're currently viewing. You can view multiple files at a time, copy and paste through files, all of that stuff. This right here is the code that you're actually viewing from that file. If you look at this selector, if you look at these two options right here, This allows you to jump to methods. So we can go to view did unload, or we can go to view did load, or any of the other ones. This one also allows you to go to its interface file, so that's its .h file, as well as we can go back here. So to debug code in Xcode, you know, it's really helpful to add breakpoints. So if we look right here, we've just added a breakpoint at that line. To add breakpoints, what you'll do is you'll just left-click on the section of this leftmost toolbar right next to the line of code that you want to add a breakpoint. If you look at this toolbar above, if we have this breakpoint symbol on right here, this will change to build and debug. Basically, that will launch your app in the iPhone simulator, and then you'll be able to view all the breakpoints, continue through the breakpoints, and all of the log statements you have in the debugging console. If we turn breakpoints off, we're then returned to build and run, which will run your app in the iPhone simulator. If you look to the left side, this is where all your file management is basically occurring. So you have your classes, other sources, which is basically your prefix file, your .pch file, which is something that you will not alter. Also your main.m. Every iPhone app has a main.m file. You will not change this at all. Also, you have your main interface builder files. So in this case, we have two. We have main window.xib and our hello world xib view controller.xib. Frameworks, again, is just the custom Apple frameworks that have been included in here, like the UIKit frameworks. As you can see, these are all things that are read-only. You cannot change these, and do not try to change them. Down here we have targets. So when you're making an app, if you want to make multiple versions of the same apps, you can do something and you can create different targets. And then you just select the target you want to build at the same time. So basically if you have, let's say, two different apps and, well, the same app, but you want to load different databases into different versions of the apps, you can select which databases you want to load into certain targets and then build only those targets. Then down here you have executables and implementation and interface builder files. Excuse me. Up here is one of the most important drop-down menus. This is going to select your configurations and your build settings in Xcode. So right now we're building to the iPhone simulator and we're building on the debug configuration. There are actually more configurations than that, and we'll talk about those later in a second. We can also look at, you can't see it up here, but there's a bar. And basically at the top you have project. So if let's go under project and let's go under edit project settings. So let's take a look at this window for a second. This is all of our Xcode settings that we care about the most. So right now, since you're going to be developing on the iOS 4.1 SDK, although the iOS 4.2 SDK will be out on Tuesday, so we're actually all going to be using that. The iOS 4.1 SDK right here, you can select your SDK for the device. So you can select either device SDK or simulator SDK. If you're building an application for Mac OS X, then you would select the Mac OS X SDK. Then you have your valid architectures. Again, you're not going to really change this. Again, a lot of the stuff you really do not care about. iOS deployment target. So this is what basically the iOS the version that you have on your phone or the device or the simulator that you're using. If you want to change this, you can, based on what device you have and what version of the OS you are running. Finally, one last thing to think about. Wherever did it go? Is this right here, which is your compiler version. Currently in iOS 4.1 and Xcode 3.2.4, we support something known as the low-level virtual machine debugger. That's a really fast debugger. It's a really fast compiler. It's 2.5 times faster and 3 times as efficient. Right now, I mean, you can use the standard GCC, but you can also use the LLVM compiler with the Clang front end. It's really good. It's really awesome. I would definitely recommend it. All right, so let's go back to our slides now. Does anybody have any questions on using Xcode? It's kind of a lot to take in a minute, but All right, so just again, some of the few Xcode basics, sorry. So we did creating breakpoints. To create a new file, all you do is you right-click on that left toolbar on the side and basically just say new file, and you'll create both the .h and the .m file for your desired file. We showed how to change your base SDK. And now the three, some of the most important things are the configurations. So you have three configurations when you build your iPhone app. You have debug, distribution, and release. Most of the cases, you'll be using debug to actually test on the simulator. If you've created a provisioning profile and you want to distribute to phones, actually, and to actual devices, you'll set it for distribution. The final one is release. Be very careful with this. If you select release and you build to release, you'll actually try to submit it to the App Store, which is a lengthy process. So be careful. Don't build it on release most of the time, unless you really are ready to submit it. Are there any questions? Awesome. All right, debugging in Xcode. We talked about this a bit, but there's also something else you should know, which is called the debug console and NSLog statements. If you insert an NSLog statement into your code, it'll basically print out that statement right there when you reached line 48,259. So you would actually put that at that line number. It's basically like a printf statement, except it goes directly to the NSLog and to the debugger console instead of to your app. It will never show up in your app. We can actually take a look at the debug console right now. So let's put on our breakpoints. Let's build and debug, which it's building right now on my computer. So this is our debug console right here. You see we've reached a breakpoint. Now what we have to do is, if we actually press the button in the app, we've reached that breakpoint right there, and it's asking us to continue past that breakpoint. So let's continue. And then it will say pending breakpoint resolved. So we've gone past that breakpoint without any issue. Most of the time, if you have an error in your code, it's definitely great to see where the breakpoints are. Since you'll basically be dealing with multitudes of view controllers, your code will be jumping all over the place when you basically perform an action through different classes, different methods. And it's really good to track where you're going through those methods and see your progress. All right, are there any questions on that? Okay, awesome. So let's close out of that. So there's one other thing that we need to know about Xcode, and that is analyzing your application using instruments. So with instruments, like I said before, you can use stuff like memory leaks. You can take a look for your graphical usage, also your memory usage, like your RAM. So if we actually, we can demonstrate this now. If we go back to the app we were just looking at, there's actually, you can't see it, but it's on my computer. If you look and you will see, let me see, just one second. You will can see run with performance tool. And if you go into run with performance tool and hit run with allocations, it'll show you where memory is being allocated when the app runs. I actually just opened up one of my other apps, and we're going to look at how the allocations are working. So the app is currently running right now. You can see this is our allocations right there. So we've malloc 16 bytes. We've malloc 32 bytes. Basically, these are things that are built into the app. You can see right now we're not, you know, we basically have 1.10 megabytes of RAM running right now. That's not bad. It gets bad if you start getting up around 40 megabytes. I've seen apps go up around 100 megabytes, and then you get on something called the kill list. The kill list is in the iPhone, and what that does is that'll kill your program if you're using too much RAM. All right, so if we looked at our allocations right here, we can see that we've jumped another 0.9 megabytes from opening a subportion of this app. So let's go back here. And then we can just open up more and more. See how it's still allocating bytes as we go along? It's all real time, so it's analyzing it completely as your app is being run. It also, you're allowed to manipulate your app while you're looking at the allocations, so you can press buttons, change settings, and take a look at where memory is allocated and if you're using too much RAM. Are there any questions?
All right, great.
So now we're actually going to get into developing for the iPhone and the iPad and the iPod Touch. And what this has done is this is done in the Objective-C 2.1 language with the Cocoa Touch API. So the Cocoa Touch API was developed by Apple. And basically what it allows you to do is it allows you to interface your multi-touch events with the programming language. So here are a few keywords that you need to know. We just talked about Cocoa Touch. But one very important one is Springboard. Springboard is the home screen of your iPhone. It's actually an app itself. So Apple has created the main app for the iPhone, and that controls the terminating and the launching of every app inside of it. So sometimes you'll see an error in your iPhone simulator that says Springboard terminated app from launch. Basically what that's saying is the app that controls the iPhone is terminating your own app. The next main thing to understand about iPhone programming is the model view controller paradigm. So this is a bit complicated. It's not something that we've really seen. But the iPhone, the way the user interface is designed is you're stacking views on top of views. Everything, all of those views are controlled by something called a view controller. So every view that you add has its own view controller. Most of the classes that you'll create for your iPhone apps are view controllers, and inside of themselves, you will load a view in the main functions to load your UI. So the way you can think about it like this is if you look at this example right here, we have the tab bar controller view. On top of that, we laid a custom content view. And beneath that custom content view, we've actually laid the tab bar itself. So basically what you're doing is you have views, and then you add subviews to those views. A subview could be anything from a button to a text field to a web view or a browser. And then you would lay those on the super view. Are there any questions about the model view controller paradigm?
So
the lowest level, you have something called self.view. Every view controller has something called self.view, and then on top of self.view, you can build up your app. So what they've done is the tab bar controller view is self.view in this case. Then they've added a custom content view, which would be done with a line of code, self.view, add subview, custom content view. And then they've also added the tab bar. So they would do self.view, add view, tab bar. It's kind of complicated. We'll go over how to add UI elements in a little bit. So the next important thing to understand about Objective-C is the .m and the .h files. .h files are header files that are used for declaration of objects that need to be synthesized, at property directives for objects that need to be synthesized, and declaration of function prototypes. .m files are for the synthesis of object variables and the implementation of predefined and custom methods for your iPhone app. We'll get to synthesis and the property directives in a little bit. So just like in C, we have a lot of basic data types. We have an integer, which is standard integer, float, which we can use to store decimal numbers. We also have a double, which provides more accuracy than the float and a little bit more length as well. Then we have a char, which is a standard character. And then we have Boolean, which can either be true or false or yes or no. The final one we have is a little bit more complicated, and it's known as an ID. Since Objective-C is an object-oriented programming language, every object has an ID to which to refer to itself, and you can refer back to it using that ID. Are there any questions about that? All right, awesome. So let's go into declaring objects in Objective-C in the .h files. So in the .h files, you'll see something at the top that says, basically, # import uikit / uikit.h. That is one of the most fundamental header files that you will need to include in all of your programs. What that does is that gives you access to buttons, image views, web views, everything like that. Excuse me. You also will have to, if you're creating objects of another class inside of this class, you'd have to import those classes as well using the, let's say if you had a class table view controller, you would do # import table view controller / table view controller .h. So let's get into basically the main part of this code right here. As you can see, we have defined something called at interface main view controller : UI view controller. Main view controller is the class name. So the actual file name of this is main view controller .h. We also then have a main view controller .m. To the other side of the colon is our parent class name, which is UIViewController. Most things have a parent class of UIViewController. Although if you're creating something like a table view, it'll have a UITableViewController, or a tab bar will have a UITabBarController. Everything, though, is usually superclassed by the UIViewController. There are just intermediate steps. So inside of our interface declaration, we've created a button right here. We've actually created a pointer to that button. Although I'd recommend not thinking of these as pointers because it's confusing. Just think of it as a button. So we've created a UI button star button one, a UI image view star image view, a CG float tap location, a CG size original image size, and a CG size new image size. We've also created a Boolean variable called rotated. So these are basically objects that we have created inside of our interface that are going to be persistent throughout every function in our .m file. It's basically a way of creating global objects. So let's now take a look at our app property directives. These go in our .h files as well. So the first one we have is app property non-atomic retain UI button star button one, app property non-atomic retain UI image view star image view, and then app property non-atomic read write for our CG variables. At the bottom, we just have app property non-atomic for our Boolean variable. The syntax for these property directives is your app property, your property name one, your property name two, et cetera, if you have more than two property names, the object type, and the object name. So you guys now are probably really confused what these property directives do. So basically what they do is they kind of tell the compiler what type of access your global objects will have. So here's a little bit more about them. So there are several types. There are actually, I believe, 20 or 30 of these properties, but you only have to use a few of them. So you have non-atomic, atomic, retain, and read-write properties. Non-atomic is the most widely used property, and it usually comes first. What this basically says is this is giving the application complete access to this object and basically no restrictions at all. If you use the property atomic, it's basically like non-atomic, except that you get restrictions that will kind of block your app from simultaneously updating that variable in multiple times. There is also one called retain, which is very similar to malloc. So what that does is you've just allocated that object into your application. So if you realize something like the Boolean variable, all we did was non-atomic, we didn't allocate a Boolean variable because there was no need to. Read-write allows accessing and mutating of an object. Are there any questions? All right, so let's look at some tricks for the app property directive. So all UI elements should be under the app property non-atomic retain directive. What this means is that you want to give your app complete control over the UI element. You also want to allocate that element so it is persistent. Objects like CG sizes, CG floats, NS numbers, which are really just all numbers, just with a fancy name, those should all be under the app property non-atomic read-write or the app property non-atomic read-only directives. If you have a Boolean, it should just be under the app property non-atomic directive. And objects that you want to create a deep copy of should be under the app property non-atomic copy directive. Are there any questions about the properties? All right, so now that we've actually created the property directives and these objects in our .h files, we need to synthesize them in our .m files. So if we go back now to our .m file, we have import main view controller.h. So basically, we're importing the header files. You guys have seen this a lot. Then we have at implementation, main view controller. Basically what this is saying is that what comes after all of this is all our methods and all of our synthesized variables that will be used in our development. So now what we're going to do is we're actually going to synthesize all the variables we just retained with our property directives in the .h file. So we have at synthesize button one, image view, tap location, original size, new image size, and rotated. So now what this is doing is this is giving the .m file access to all of these objects and global access as well. So basically all you would have to do is you'd have to say something like image view.image equals, let's say, test image.png. Instead of creating a new image view doing UI image view start image view equals UI image view alloc init with image test image.png. You can see how it's a little bit more easy. Are there any questions on synthesis of variables? All right, so let's now take a look at methods in Objective-C. These are really cool, and they kind of have funky syntax. So what you're going to start with is you're going to start with a minus or a plus sign. Minus indicate class methods, whereas plus signs indicate private methods. You will always use a minus sign method, mostly for your development. I wouldn't even worry about the plus signs. So you'll have a minus sign, and then you'll have the parentheses, the return type of the function, the method name, colon, parameter type in parentheses, and parameter name. All right, so if we have an example of this, we have a function cg size, get size, UI image view, image view. This is not really a necessary function. Image view has a property called size. But if we wanted to do it, basically what this is saying is that we have a function named get size, which will return a cg size value, and that takes in a UI image view. It actually takes in a pointer to the UI image view. So that's how you declare a method with one parameter in Objective-C. It gets a little trickier when you're doing two or more parameters. So we have now a new type of syntax where the method name is actually broken up among multiple parts of the line of code. So you have basically the minus sign, and then you have return type in parentheses, method name 1, parameter 1 type, parameter 1 name, method name 2, parameter 2 type, parameter 2 name. So if we created the example minus sign ns integer table view, mg expanding table view, number of child rows in section, ns integer section, what this is doing is this is actually taking two arguments, a table view of type mg expanding table view, which is actually a custom table view class that we created, or and an ns integer, which is the number of sections in that table view. Does that make sense? So this is actually the interesting thing. Now, when you call this method, what you will actually say is something like this. You would do, you would call like self.view table view, colon, you would add that table view. Then you would do number of child rows in section, and then the ns integer section. So we're going to take a break in a few minutes, but let's just look at calling methods in Objective-C. So the way this is done with the object that is going to call the method name, and the parameter. So if you did something like self.navigation controller, push view controller, next view controller, animated yes, this is where the two parts of your method name come in. So if you look right here, push view controller is the first part of our method name, animated is the second part of our method name. And you can tell from this method that the first thing it takes is a type of an object of type UIViewController, and then a Boolean variable. So basically what you're saying is, all right, I want to push a new ViewController onto the stack, into the view, and have it animated when it enters the view. So then we have built-in methods in Objective-C. So the two that you're really going to care about, void load view, which creates a view, and you're going to add the UI elements inside of this function, and this does it typically without an interface builder file, which is called a nib. Then you have void view did load. This will add elements to a view after the view has been loaded, usually used with a nib, but not always. So in some cases, when you're using an interface builder file, you will always use view did load, and you will never use load view. However, if you're not using an interface builder file, you might use both. So it's kind of a little tricky to figure out. You'll see where and when you need to add your UI elements. All right, so now it's going to get a little tricky. We're going to add a button. We're going to look at code for adding a button to an iPhone application. So this is a UI element. This is all the code for adding one single button to the view of an element. I know it's a little tricky. It looks might be easier in some languages, but this is definitely so much more fun to write. So let's look at this. So we have UI button star CS50 button equals UI button button with type UI button type rounded rect. So what this is saying is that we're going to create a rounded rectangle button. Button with type is, again, a built-in method in Objective-C. And most likely, in all cases, Xcode will autocomplete for you and basically interpret what you want to write there, which is really nice, because there are very, very long method names. I've seen some that go over 100 characters long. Then we have CS50 button set background image, UI image, image named, @ testImage.png, bracket. If you look at this right here, this is actually a method in of itself. This is taking a UI image, and basically it's making a UI image out of a string that refers to that image. So that's going to look in your project for that image, testimage.png, and create a UI image out of that. The next thing is for state UI control state normal. That just refers to basically how your button is going to act when pressed. It's almost always going to be UI control state normal. Does anybody have any questions on those first two lines of code? All right, great. So the next thing we're going to do is we're going to set the frame of the button, how big it is. So we would do cs50button.frame equals cgrectmake 1010 90 90. This is the x coordinate of the button, the y coordinate of the button, the height of the button, sorry, the width of the button, and the height of the button right here. So basically we're creating a square button that's a little bit offset from the upper left-hand corner. However, our button doesn't have, it won't do anything right now when we press it. So we need to add a target and an action to this button. So what we're going to do is we're going to call the method cs50button add target self action at selector launch cs50button view controller colon for control events UI control event touch up inside. What this is basically saying is that the target for this button is itself. So it's going to refer to a method inside of this class. Then we have the action. The action is the actual method that will be called when that button is hit. That always needs the at selector directive around side of it. And launch cs50button view controller is the name of our method. Down here for control events, UI control event touch up inside is again something that you really will not need to worry about and something that you really shouldn't change. At the very bottom is what we were talking about with the model view controller paradigm and how we're going to add that subview to the view of the app. So we would just do self.view add subview cs50button. So now we've actually created a button. And that's, you know, about 10 lines of code to create a button, but it's really cool. That actually doesn't tell you what the button does or make the button do anything. That just makes you able to click it. Are there any questions? iPhone apps can definitely run like a few hundred thousand lines of code, but don't worry, you will never get there. Well, you'll get there eventually, but not for this project. All right, let's say we want to add another UI element, like a scroll view. So you all know on your iPhone you have this really cool thing called inertial scrolling where you scroll up, it kind of bounces a bit, and then it scrolls back down. So let's make one of those. So the first thing we're going to do is we're going to do UI scroll view star CS50 scroll view equals brackets UI scroll view alloc. So we've just allocated a scroll view. Init with frame CG rect make 00320480. What this is saying is we've just created a scroll view that will fill the entire screen of the iPhone. So now if we want to say cs50scrollview.contentSize equals cgSizeMake 321,000, what that's saying is that's actually how much it'll scroll. So that's the length of the scroll view itself. Now if we want to say cs50scrollview.scrollsToTopYes, what this will do is that'll say automatically every time you enter this view controller, the scroll view will be positioned at the top. Now cs50scrollview.bounces will set the bouncing. cs50scrollview.zooming will set the zooming to yes. So what this will allow us to do is to pinch to zoom. So then we can set our maximum zoom scale to 2.0 and our minimum zoom scale to 0.5. Now if we want to add that to the main view again, we just do self.view add subview. That should be cs50scrollview. Oops. Are there any questions about adding a UI element? There are tons of UI elements that you can add, literally. Hundreds, maybe even thousands. Really cool ones like web views. You can launch a browser inside your app. Alert views, everything like that. Awesome buttons. You can add buttons to the tab bar, to the nav bar. You can create really cool animations. You can actually add an image views. You can add movie views. Very cool stuff. Any questions? All right. So we should probably take a break now for 5 minutes, just so I can get something set up to show you guys. All right, thanks. So now we're actually going to take a look at a little project I coded up last night, which is called Hello World XIB View. Hello World XIB. That's the name of our project. So if we take a look at this right here, we have four classes on the side over here. We have our Hello World XIB app delegate.m.h. Those are universal to every single iPhone project. Every single iPhone app will have an app delegate and an app delegate.h. Then I created a view controller called Hello World XIB View Controller.h and .m. So let's run this app and see what it does. I basically program this app using a little bit of code and some of Interface Builder, which is what I'm going to show you guys right now. Personally, I'm not a big fan of Interface Builder. I hard code in all my UI elements. But for the sake of this project, it's a good thing to know how to do if you want to create simple table views, tab bars, buttons, labels, anything. So we've built the app, and now let's get out of instruments right here, and let's take a look at the app itself. So this app that I created is basically we have a UI label, which was created in Interface Builder, and a button. What the button will do is it'll change the background color of the window to a random color, completely random. So we generated RGB values that are random. Now who thinks this will work? Oh, cool. So it's basically just a really cool little app. Now, this is not enough for a final project, but it's just a little fun thing to create as you go along. So let's actually look at the code of this and how we did it. So here we have the app delegate. This basically is universal again, this code right here. We have a window, and then we have a Hello World XIB view controller, star view controller. So we've created our view controller, an instance of that view controller in here, an object of it. Now, if you look here, we have something called an IB outlet. An IB outlet basically means is we've connected that UI interface element to the interface builder. UI interface, whoops. All right, so now let's take a look at Hello World XIB app delegate.m. So we've synthesized our window, we've synthesized our view controller. And now an application did finish launching with options, which is basically the main function of your program that will launch your application. We have window add subview, view controller.view, window make key invisible. So what that's basically saying is, all right, we've just set the main view of our app to that view controller, which was our Hello World XIB view controller. And window make key invisible basically just made our app visible and returned yes. If you look at these five methods right here, in iOS 4.0, we introduced something called multitasking. So you have application did enter background, application will enter foreground, application did become active, and application will terminate. You'll have to fill those in only if you are using the core audio, core location, or core motion frameworks. Is there any questions about the app delegate? All right, let's move on and take a look actually at Hello World XIB view controller.h. So in this header file, basically what we've done right here is we've created two IB outlets and UI elements right here. So we have IB outlet UI label star label and IB outlet UI button star press me. Now down here, we've also created the property directives for those, which is app property and the non-atomic retain and then the IB outlet and the standard types afterwards. Now you might be curious, is this line right here, which says IB action, hit the button. So we're actually defining a method prototype right there that will actually correspond to a button in the interface builder. Now if we look at Hello World XIB view controller.m, which is right here. Basically, we have synthesize label and press me, a lot of basically methods that you don't need to fill in. Void view did unload, did receive memory warning. Again, you're not going to really have to mess with those. View did load, in this case, we're not going to fill in, but if we would want to do any extra setup after loading from our nib, we would want to add elements into view did load. But let's actually go down and take a look at that IB action method that we set up right here, which is hit the button. So what I did was self.view, set background color, UI color, color with red, random mod 255 divided by 255.0, green, same thing, blue, and then you can't see it, well, but there's actually a term called alpha, which is, again, just basically a color setting. So what we're basically saying is when the interface signals that you have hit that button, it'll call this method and change the background color to a random color. So now here's the interesting thing. Let's take a look at Interface Builder. So if we open up mainwindow.xib, which is opening right now, there's a lot of stuff that we can look at. So this is the first thing we see. It says view loaded from Hello World XIB view controller. We're also going to see this right here, which is our little file manager, mainwindow.xib. You have the file owner, which is of type UI application, the first responder. You're not going to care about the first responder. You also have the app delegate, and we have our Hello World XIB view controller and our window. So we can look at actually connections made to the app delegate and to the file owner. So if we just left click, we can see that we have two things, a view controller, which is Hello World XIB view controller, which is actually linked to this part of the app, this view controller. We also have the window, which as you can see then, this became highlighted back here, and that window is connected via an IB connector to this portion. Again, the delegate will always be connected to the file's owner. So now let's actually take a look at opening up Hello World XIB viewcontroller.xib. So we have this right here, and now we have our actual view on this side over here. Now the great thing is, see, this is a UI element, and we can actually view this one's connections. So it's actually connecting to a PressMe, which is in file owner. One second. You can see the outlets from file owner. So label connects that outlet to label, and press me is connected to the button. We also have view, which is connected to the view, and we also have the IB outlet, which is under received actions, to hit the button. And basically what that is set is to touch up inside. Let's say we actually delete this, hit the button, right? So now what we want to do is we want to connect that IB action to our button. So what we would do is we would drag from this little circle to press me. And we've connected that outlet. Now what we want to do is we want to specify what type of outlet it is, and usually what we're going to do is we're going to do touch up inside. So we've selected touch up inside. Now here's the great thing about Interface Builder. They provide you with a library to add UI elements to your interface. So let's take a look at that for a second. So here's our library. This is really pretty spiffy. So we have tons of stuff we can do. So we can add like a slider bar. This will allow us to slide, basically. Like, let's say if you want to do a volume control, right? You can use that to control your volume. You can also do stuff like an activity indicator view, text fields, segmented controls, even something like a date picker. So if you look in like our apps or, you know, like alarm clock, you'll see like you have a date picker or a calendar. You get rid of the date picker. Then you can do stuff like cool stuff like a scroll view, a map view, which embeds a Google map in there. So you have MK map view, web views, browsers, image views, table views. Table views are also really cool. And then we can expand our table view to fit a certain area if we want it to. See, what else do we have? Buttons, we have multiple types of buttons. Search bars, navigation bars. And I'm just basically putting these anywhere right now. You can see how they work. Tab bars.
Can you make them look different than what's going on? Can you change the star on favorites to like a certain?
Yes, you actually can. So let's take a look at that in a second. Right now, ooh. Oh, sorry, the question was, can you change basically the badges on the tab bar items right there? And you definitely can. We're going to look at something called Inspector in a second, which will allow you to inspect your UI elements in Interface Builder and change their properties. So now let's say we just wanted to add a UI tab bar item. We would drag it in right there, and now we have a three tab bar. But now let's say we need a view controller inside that tab bar. We would just take something like a tab bar view controller. It's not liking that. Whatever. Oh, I don't have it configured properly. Basically, there's a little bit more of configuration you need to do, but you can just create any really graphical component inside Interface Builder. Now let's take a look at Inspector. So Inspector will allow us to change the properties of these elements. So this is our Inspector right here. So let's take a look at this button. So the button attributes, it's rounded rect. It has a text color of default, which is our blue in this case. You can also create a shadow for it. So you see the text is a shadow now. Cool stuff. Control, basically alignment. Background color, we can change its background color to a really nasty color. You can also make the button hidden or the view hidden. If we look under here, we can view its referencing outlets, which in this case, the view, since we're no longer on the button, is going to reference to the file owner. We go back to the button, though, we look at Press Me, and it's actually referencing to the file owner again. This will change the button size, and you can actually auto-resize the button as well and change its position and alignment. Now here is the button's identity. So the class is UIButton. If you create a custom view controller and you want to add that view controller in the XIB file, you would set its class right here. You can also basically set its accessibility. So if you want to play a sound or generate an image, you would click one of those fields. Are there any questions about Interface Builder? All right, let's get out of Interface Builder and look back at the app. So that was a very quick app you can create. You know, once you get the hang of doing it, stuff like that doesn't take that long. All right, so again, Interface Builder, it's very inflexible. Once you have added an element in an Interface Builder, there is no way to override it in code. So if you add a navigation bar in Interface Builder, you will not be able to hide it in the code. You will not be able to change its color, its tint, set its title, or anything. You really need to make sure that if you're using Interface Builder, you're happy with what you have. If you want to create something more custom, I'd definitely hard code it in. It's possible to hard code in every single UI element into your app. That's what I do. That's what a lot of developers do, because it just allows you much more control over the design and style. Again, we looked at IB outlets. So if you're when you drag and drop an item into the interface, you need to connect it to an outlet in one of your view controllers. So in the .h file, you would say IB outlet UI button star button, and then you would have the property directive property non-atomic retain IB outlet UI button star button. IB actions are the methods for the interface builder. So in the .h file, you declare the method prototype, IB action hit the button. And then in your .m file, your method implementation in that method. All right, we just looked at that. So the next thing we're going to talk about is memory management. You have to do this yourself, all of it. It kind of sucks because it's going to cause a lot of problems at first. There are built-in functions called release, retain, alloc, malloc, and auto-release. If you've created an object without allocating it, it'll auto-release by itself. If you do alloc an object, you need to make sure that you release it in the dalloc function. If we actually go back and we look at that Xcode file, right, where was it? If we look at this right here, we have a void did receive memory warning. You won't change this, but this will warn you if your application is basically taking too much memory. Then we have view did unload. And then dealloc right here, which in this case, there's nothing to dealloc because we haven't allocated anything. But if you do allocate something, it either needs to be dealloced or freed, as we call it, inside of the method where you allocated it or at the end in the dealloc function. There is actually something in iOS that'll tell you the retain count, which how many times you've allocated an object. It's actually possible to allocate an object more than once in this language. So let's say if you had a map, you could have retained that map 4 times. And then in that case, you want to free it 4 times as well. The problem is that there's a flaw in iOS. Retain count is unreliable and will not report the correct values of the number of retains. Watch out for that. This is where, again, you know, analyzing something with instruments really comes in very helpful. Is there any questions about memory management? All right. The next thing we're going to look at is data structures and core data. So if you're going to want to store user input or you're going to want to store, you know, a number of objects, you know, you have the similar things. You have arrays. Well, in this case, it's called an NS array. You also have NS sets, NS dictionaries, and NS mutable arrays. Those are basically just, you know, different types of very small data structures that allow you to store objects of different things. So if we have an NS array star my array, NS array alloc, and it with objects, at hello, at my name is Scott. Basically, we've just stored into an array 5 strings. If you note that a string in Objective-C has to be demarcated with this at sign every single time, or else it will not compile. Again, since we've allocated this array, we're going to have to free it at the end of our program. Are Are there any questions? All right, so now let's move on to a more tricky subject right here, which is core data. So if you're using a database, which most likely in this case is going to be SQLite, then you're going to need a core data wraparound for your app. So core data revolves around three main concepts: the managed object model, the managed object context, and the persistent store coordinator. So let's take a look at the managed object model. Basically, you can think of this as a database schema. Your objects are known as entities, and these entities have information called attributes. To set up your managed object model, you will create a .xc data model file. So basically what this is that Xcode has a built-in visual creator for your data models, which will automatically set up the managed object context for you. So this is actually, you can't see it that well, but this is the .xcd data model for one of the apps that we created. So if you have something like a listing, a page, and a map, those are all entities, and every entity has an attribute, like a body, a page, or an address. And then besides attributes, they also have relationships, so how they relate to different entities. So basically, if you take a look at this, if you have a trip has days in it, a day has bookmarks, trip bookmarks is a subclass of bookmark, a page also has bookmarks. If you look, a parent page has subpages, so that arrow has a double-headed arrow that goes back into subpages, and a map also has a page of itself. So it's kind of very complicated. I'm guessing you guys won't be doing much database work with your apps, but if you do, you will need to use core data, and you will need to create a data model. You can also create your own data types in Objective-C by creating something, let's say you want to do page.h and page.m. Inside page.h and page.m, what you would do is you define all the, basically the smaller data types and objects that that page is made up of. So we have the manage object context. So this is the most important of the three. We will call methods on the manage object context to access information from our database. So let's say we do manage object context, if manage object context not equals nil, return manage object context. And then we would do something like mg app delegate star UI application shared application delegate manage object context equals app delegate manage object context, return the manage object context. What we're doing right there is we're setting up the manage object context for our application to be used. It's a little bit tricky, but the manage object context in the future is what allows us to save entities back into our database. So now let's actually take a look at saving with the manage object context. So presuming you've modified and added an object and it corresponds to your database, you just have to enter these lines to save the state of the object. So you would first create an NS error, so NS error star error equals nil. And then you would do if not self.manageObjectContext, save, ampersand error, NS log, error saving after editing, whatever you want to edit, error useful info. So what this will do is that'll call the save function within manageObjectContext, and then it'll save whatever you've just modified back into your database. It's a little bit tricky, but after a while you'll realize that it's really just repeating these lines of code. Not too bad. All right, so the next thing we have is the persistent store coordinator. So the way I like to think about this is the guy who opens the Apple Store. He's not the guy that sells the phone, but you know the store needs to be open for so phones to be sold. So what this does is this sets up the names of and locations of the databases. Any managed object context that saves an object goes through the persistent store coordinator. So now if we look at the app delegate is a class in every iPhone app. It handles the launching of the app, and the manage object context and persistent store coordinator need to be set up in the app delegate. Let's just take a look at that quickly, and then we'll take a short break. This basically right here is setting up the manage object. This is setting up the persistent store coordinator. Then we're basically going back up here, setting up the manage object context and the manage object model. So those three methods need to be controlled inside of your application delegate. All right, guys, let's just take a short break to change tapes, and then we'll talk about building a great app with different types of UIs. All right, guys, so now we're going to basically learn about how to build a great app. So, you know, what's necessary to make an app fun, cool, and clever. Some of the best apps are really simple, and they just make a lot of money. You know, there are people who have made millions of dollars making iPhone apps. So you never know. If you get the right idea, you could hit it rich. So let's take a look at the basics of the app. So most every app, though not all, has the following: a tab bar, a navigation bar and a status bar. Actually, every app has the status bar. It's universal to the iPhone. It can be hidden in certain cases, but will most likely always be visible. So let's look at the tab bar. So the tab bar is that spiffy thing right there on the right. This thing. So the tab bar has tab bar items, and each one of those items launches a new view controller. So the tab bar is classed under the UI tab bar controller class, and it has a few properties. It has view controllers, so NS array. So if you do tab bar dot view controllers, that'll give you an array of view controllers corresponding in order to each tab bar item. Then you have customizable view controllers, which is also an NS array, and it's a kind of like not as used property. The delegate. The delegate will tell you which tab bar item has currently been selected or is in use. Then you have more navigation controller. If you guys are iPhone users or iPhone fanatics, you'll realize that at some tab bars at the end, there's a more button, which will allow you to select more tabs. And then you have the selected view controller. This will return the view controller that's currently being used. So let's say we want to create a tab bar application. You can do this two ways. One, by selecting a tab bar app at the start of Xcode, or by hard coding it yourself. I recommend hard coding it yourself, because then you can add a tab bar to almost any application. If you start with a tab bar app in Xcode, you'll be provided with interface builder files, but those interface builder files will again really limit what your app can do. So the way you would do this is you would say UI tab bar controller start tab bar equals UI tab bar controller alloc init tab bar dot frame, and then as you see here, we've made a frame that's 320 pixels over to the right. Oops. And zero, and then 320 pixels in width and 49 pixels in height. So then we need to create an array of view controllers. So we would do something like NS array view controllers, NS array array with objects, VC1, VC2, nil. In this case, let's just assume that VC1 and VC2 are predefined view controllers that we've already initialized. And then we would do tab bar set view controllers, and window add subview tab bar view. This should all be done in the app delegate. Basically, what this has now done is this has given you a tab bar that you can manipulate at any time. This is great. This is really cool. It's a tab bar in 5 lines of code. It's exhilarating. All right. Another thing you have is the navigation bar in an app. So this adds hierarchical navigation to your app. It's, again, 360 points by 44 points. If you'll notice, Apple has now broken the standard again of measuring everything in pixels and does it in points because different models have different resolutions. What the navigation controller and the navigation bar do is that they store view controllers on the stack. So every time you basically hit like next view controller, that pushes a new view controller on the stack, and you're looking at a new view. So it's classed under the UI navigation controller class, and it has properties navigation bar, view controllers, which is NS array, top view controller, which is the top view controller on the stack, and then visible view controller, which is the view controller that you're looking at on the stack. These are, again, really easy to add to your applications. You would just do UI navigation controller star nav controller equals UI navigation controller alloc init. And then you would just set the frame for the navigation controller and add it to your app. And then when you hit a button, basically you would add a bar button item to your navigation controller. And then that bar button item's target would then launch another view controller, and that view controller would be stored on the stack of this navigation controller. So one of the most popular types of apps that we actually see during the final projects are the table view apps. So the table view belongs to the UI table view controller class. It's probably one of the coolest classes in the iPhone programming language. The best thing about it is it can be customized completely with everything for height, width, images, and basically any type of text you want to put in there. You know, if you look at apps like IMDb or YouTube and everything, they've actually put little pictures of the videos inside the table view cells. You can change the background images, you can change the length, the width, the height, add disclosure indicators. It's really awesome. Now again, this can be created by clicking table view app when Xcode launches or by hard coding a table. If you click the table view app, you'll be once again limited to just a single table view. You can't add a tab bar, you can't really add much else. So that's why I definitely recommend hard coding a table view. So if we want to look at hard coding a table view, let's start in the .h file. So in this case, we've created a table view controller file called CS50 table view controller, which is subclass of UI table view controller. Now these things are interesting right here. These are actually properties that it conforms to. In this case, the UI table view delegate and the UI table view data source. Now, inside of that interface, we've created a UI table view start table view, and then we've basically used the property directive non-atomic retain on that object. So if we do it in the .m file, there are a few methods that need to be implemented, and I'll leave it up to you guys to figure out how to implement them, but I will list the methods for you and tell you what they do. So the first one is ns integer number of sections in table view, UI table view star table view. This is where you specify how many sections are in your table view. If you've looked at an iPhone before and you've used an app, you'll realize that you can make sections in your table view that are either grouped or plain with little dividers in them. This is where you'll signify, you know, the number of sections. This is literally just returning an integer, in this case, an ns integer. Then you have ns integer table view number of child rows in section, ns integer section. Again, this just says how many rows are in that section. Now here's an interesting one: table view UI table view cell star table view UI table view star table view did child cell for row index path ns index path index path. This is where you're going to dequeue your reusable cells. So if you have a really large table view, you're not going to want to have every table view cell loaded into memory at that point. This is where you're going to dequeue those and make those cells reusable. Not that many lines of code, and you guys can actually look up and see how to do that. The final one that you'll have to implement is the most important one. Void table view UI table view star table view did select row at index path, ns index path, index path. This is basically what happens when you select a row in a table view. This is what will either launch a new view controller, launch an alert view, anything that you want it to do. Now, of course, there are many more table view methods like height for row and index path, height for child cell, width, so you can modify all that. Basically adding in custom features to your table view cell. Are there any questions about tables? Yes. So the interesting thing about the question was, can you look at current apps and their source code? Most developers restrict their source code and will not post it online. There are some that do. In any case, it could be more confusing than helpful. There are definitely books that I'd recommend, and there are definitely websites that have sample code. Once you log on to developer.apple.com, they actually will provide sample code for a number of their classes. They have 38,000 pages of documentation to help you. Which I've never read all of them. I wouldn't expect you to either. But it's definitely very cool. And yes, so there's sample code on there. I'd look at it. But I wouldn't look at a whole project. If you look at a whole project, it could be very confusing. Are there any questions on table views? Any other questions? All right, so there's another cool type of view controller that you can add to your program, which is called a modal view controller. Modal view controllers are pop-ups. They're not a very main part of your app. You hit a button and they pop up. They're really cool. You can put anything you want in them. Excuse me. You can put a table view. You can make them curl up, flip down, have cool animations. They're used for alert views, anything like that. So the syntax for presenting a modal view controller would be self, present modal view controller name, animated, boolean. In this case, so basically it would just be like self present modal view controller. Let's just say next view controller animated yes. If you want to dismiss that modal view controller, you do self dismiss modal view controller, view controller name animated boolean again. Another great thing about the iPhone is the multi-touch. There are so many gestures you can use, and to do those, you access the UI gesture recognizer class. So let's say you wanted to create a swipe left. That would actually be done with an IB action. Even though you don't have an interface builder file, it still is automatically recognized. So you would do IB action handle swipe left UI gesture recognizer star sender. Sender basically, you can think of sender as a data type that's just kind of like, all right, this is the parameter we're getting in from pressing a button or swiping. It's just kind of an ID that's passed into this method. So let's say if someone swiped left on the screen, you could display an alert message. You would just put that here. So if someone did swipe left, it would just display the alert. It's pretty cool. You can do that with pinching, zooming, anything. Any questions on gesture recognizers? All right. Another great thing is handling the input from the sensor. So let's say you want to use the accelerometer. What you would do is you would implement the method void accelerometer, UI accelerometer, accelerometer did accelerate, UI acceleration, acceleration. So basically this takes input from your the accelerometer in your iPhone, and let's just say if your accelerometer, let's say your phone's accelerating, you just display an alert message again. I mean, you can do much more complicated stuff, but it's basically the general gist. Do anything you want inside those methods. To access the camera, you can actually open up the camera inside your iPhone app and take a picture. The way you would do that is you create a UI image picker controller class in a modal view controller. So when you launch that pop-up, that would actually launch the camera screen for you. And then you can take a picture and access it in your application. Are there any questions about using sensor input? If you have an iPhone 4, which is awesome, you can also access gyroscope data. You can also access data from the ambient light sensor, the proximity sensor, all sorts of cool stuff. All right, another cool thing is if you're developing for iPad, what you're going to want to create is something called a split view controller app, which is what we talked about before. Basically, what that is that's a hybrid between a table view and a UI view app, and it will basically just change as you rotate it. So when you hold it straight up, it'll just be a table view, and then when you rotate it this way, it'll have a table view on the side and a view on the other side. I'm assuming most of you guys are actually going to be developing basically kind of like data apps for the iPhone, you know, kind of useful apps, not really games. If you are interested in games, though, Apple actually, these are, again, all created by Apple, APIs that you plug in. So you have OpenGLES, which does a 3D animation for your game. Again, Core Animation, which handles a lot of that animation as well. Core Audio, which is for basically audio effects, and Quartz Composer, which allows you to graphically create 2D and 3D animations yourself. Games are awesome. They make a lot of money in the store. All right, so you know, finally, guys, just some tips about making iPhone apps. Make it intuitive. No one wants to see 1,000 buttons on your app or a very convoluted hierarchy. And then just have one clear goal in mind when you're making this. Don't try to set out to do too many things with one app. People aren't going to like that. You know, the best apps are the really simple ones, the ones that just do one simple task. They're the ones that people like the most. You know, creating these are really exhilarating. It's really awesome just to, you know, take a product that you made and put it on your phone and walk around with it. It's really cool. It's really awesome. You guys can all do this. So, yeah, thanks for coming, and that's it.